Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff? Only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk. Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to my favorite time of the week, Thursdays, where we do the Junk Refund Show, which is the world's longest-running junk removal radio show. Let's face it, there's a lot of trash out there. There's a lot of junk in people's lives, both in their minds and in their apartments and in their driveways and whatever. And it's simply a better life and a less stressful life if you can get that junk out of your life or your driveway or your backyard or wherever it might be. So we are a junk removal business headquartered in Bethesda, Maryland. We've done this for 20 years. We go all over the country. We have 63 affiliates around the country that also do jobs for us in various parts of the country. We literally have been around the country. We have gone from Maine, I think Brunswick, Maine, to Tampa, Florida, from Chicago, Illinois, to San Antonio, Texas, and from Seattle, Washington, to San Diego, California, doing junk removal jobs. And they're always a lot of fun, with very, very rare exceptions where there's some kind of a headache or something like that that happens. But pretty much it's just a fun thing to do because you never know what you're going to find. Sometimes you find hidden treasures, and you get paid for it to haul away people's stuff, and then you find, you know, some interesting stuff hidden. Maybe you find some small change hidden in the crease of a couch, or maybe you find, you know, dollar bills or $20 bills or $50 bills hidden in people's clothing, or maybe you find, you know, who knows what else, jewelry that's hidden, you know, under the top of a dresser where the family, when they came in and went through and took everything out that they wanted, didn't realize that the top of the dresser lifts up, and underneath there's a bunch of jewelry. It's basically a large jewelry box kind of thing. So we have a lot of fun just discovering things and getting paid to do it. And the thing that's unique about us is that if you have some good stuff that really should not be thrown away and it should not be donated, we put it up for sale. And if it sells, you get money back. We've sold everything from G.I. Joes to full-size Yodas to automobiles to magazine collections to jewelry, all kinds of things, and coin collections, all kinds of stuff that you find when you're cleaning out somebody's home. So the idea is pretty simple. I tell people that when I would go around and speak at real estate sales meetings when I first got started doing this, I told them on a business card, on your typical business card, on the front of it, you have how somebody can get a hold of you. Phone number, cell phone, email, physical address, whatever. But on the back of a business card, many times it's blank. And on the back of the business card, I think you need to put three reasons on why somebody should get a hold of you. Not how, but why. Because the why comes first. They have to have a reason to get a hold of you. And so I listed three reasons. The first reason, I put in save 20% on the cost of junk removal. We checked some of the prices of some of the bigger companies out there and set our prices at about 20% below them. So we save you money. That's reason number one. That just puts us on the map that says, hey, we're trying to compete. Reason number two is designed to catch your attention and make you go, ah, that's cool. So we give out Ben & Jerry's ice cream or send you electronic gift cards to Ben & Jerry's when we do your job for you. We've done that for 20 years. And the third reason is what sets us apart. We put up your good stuff for sale and you get money back. Nobody else does that. And so that comes from kind of thinking win-win from Stephen Covey's, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, which I used to work for that company for a few years. That's kind of where that came from. So on the back of your card, if you're in business, on the back of your card is a gold mine area that might be probably will be blank right now. And if you can put three reasons back there that tells people why they should use you instead of anybody else, you're in the game. Then you're serious. The first reason just basically says, hey, I'm serious about this. The second reason says, hey, here's something cool that we do that's unusual. And the third reason hopefully closes the deal, and they get that card, and they look on the back, and they go, oh, I'm an idiot to not use these guys, right? That's kind of the idea. So that's one of the things we do. We have I think it's 500 reviews, something like that, on Groupon with a 97% customer satisfaction rating. That's been a good thing for us over the years. You can go to Groupon.com. And you can look up 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, and you'll have plenty of reviews to read. On Facebook Marketplace, we use that to find people who want to get rid of some metal of some kind, be it a fridge, a dryer, an air conditioning unit, some pipes, some computer equipment, small appliances, whatever. We go out, and people will advertise that for free, you know, come pick up my fridge, free fridge. We will go and pick it up for free, and then if you become a junk removal or if you become a scrap removal client, we give you a little card that night that gives you 20% off junk removal. So now you're in the fold, and you can go on our email, you know, database list if you'd like to, and we try on those days where, you know, in the evening, sometimes we'll go out and try to do five of those jobs in a day or in an evening, which gets us five more customers. And then we take the metal to a metal scrapyard where they pay us for the metal, and then we go from there. So we did one of those jobs a couple of days ago, and it was fascinating. This on Facebook Marketplace, and when you know a little bit about scrap metal, you know that the golden word in scrap metal is the word copper. They will pay you right now for every pound of copper you take into a scrap metal yard in our area in Maryland. They'll pay you $4.50 a pound. If you walk in there with just regular metal, like a toaster, they'll pay you 6 cents a pound. $4.50 a pound compared to 6 cents a pound, it's about 80 times better, right? So this lady puts an ad with a photo in on Facebook Marketplace a couple of nights ago, and it was for an air conditioning unit, in fact, two air conditioning units. And there's a bunch of copper pipe, 2 or 3 feet long, sticking out from the tops of these units. And all she said was, you know, would like it gone to, you know, ASAP, first come, first serve. Well, I saw that ad at about 7 o'clock, and I sent a message back through Facebook that says, hey, I'm interested. I could come get it tonight. And I've got a truck with a lift gate that's big enough to get it all. No problem. Well, we messaged back and forth for a couple of minutes, and she gave me the address, and I went out and I picked it up. Her husband told me that they got 100 responses from people who wanted to come and pick this up. And out of 100 people, they picked us. And I think one of the reasons may have been they saw our reviews. We have 170 or 80 reviews on Facebook Marketplace, again, at about a 96 or 97% customer satisfaction rating. And I think that's pretty good, and that grows as we continue to go out and pick up scrap metal from people and do some of these smaller jobs. But I was really pleased that out of 100 people, we got picked, right? And we weren't the first ones to respond, but she obviously liked something about what we were doing, and I went out by myself with the big truck with the lift gate, loaded it all up, and lo and behold, the next morning took it to a scrap metal yard and got $318 for it. Now, in scrap metal world, that's pretty good for one, you know, one, basically it's a pickup truckload of stuff. That's pretty good to make that much, and most of that comes, of course, from the copper and from the, what we'll call it, the radiator type screen that runs around the perimeter of an air conditioning unit has copper in it. And so that's a pretty good deal. So for one night, I went and made one stop and got $318 the next morning. That's why we go out and pick it up for free. Another thing that happened recently is that a gentleman that has had us, in fact, it's happened with a couple of situations, a guy named Dave in Kensington called us a couple of days ago and said in a voicemail, I've got this and this and this and this and this, and he left a list of about 20 items. Can you come get it on Wednesday? Or on Tuesday, I guess. It would have been Tuesday. I said, yeah, we could do that. When I got there, it turned out to be a $1,400 job. And I asked Dave, I said, how did you hear about us? And he pulled out my business card that I gave him when I came by and picked up an elliptical from him months earlier for free for scrap metal. And he said, and here's my card. And on the card, I say, you know, 20% off junk removal. So his $1,400 junk removal job, because he's moving, turned into an $1,120 job. And he was thrilled, right? So that's the idea. We go out and we pick up scrap metal for free. We get paid for the metal. We don't get rich on it, but we do get something. And we get, more importantly, we get more customers that we can add to our email database. We get known more and more. And people like us because we came and picked up something they needed to get rid of for free. So that's kind of a little bit of the scrap metal world that we do. I did a job this morning for a Jewish preschool where these little kids went into school a couple of days ago, and we hauled off a bunch of their old tables. You know, the old tables that you'll set up in a church gymnasium for a wedding or a funeral, you know, meal or whatever. These round, some round tables, some big rectangular tables. Those tables have a lot of pressed wood in them, but they have metal frames. So I took them over to the scrap metal yard, kind of hoping that, okay, hope these are acceptable and stuff. And I threw off about 10 of those tables. It was 860 pounds of metal we got rid of. And one of the guys that kind of runs the show over there actually came out and took a look at it, didn't say anything to me, went back in, checked the metal framing just to make sure it was metal. It was. Didn't say anything to me again. So it was, and then they paid us for it, right? So that worked. Anyway, that was good. So I enjoy, and it's a lot of fun. And I will tell you this too: I take some of that money, that cash that I usually come home with at night. I have two little envelopes in my desk drawer that are for my granddaughters. One is two. One is almost one. And I take $5 a day, and I stick it in each of their envelopes. That is their savings account, et cetera, for these little kids. One of them's got over $2,000 in her account now, and the other one's got over $1,000 in her account. And the little nippers are just, the oldest one is just barely two, right? So it's just a fun thing, and it's one of the funnest things I do is to come home and pull out these envelopes and take $5 out and stick it in for one child and $5 sticking in for another grandchild. And then the rest of the cash just goes to me and I keep it, you know, as just a little safety emergency cash fund kind of thing. And that works out well for everybody. So getting it, one of the ways to get some of the junk out of your mind with your kids' expenses in the future or your grandkids' expenses is to put time on your side and start saving for them now. And you don't need to save a lot now because you got a lot of time to continue to contribute and to let the money grow. I will tell you this, if you start when a child or a grandchild is born and you put away $5 a day for them, by the time they're 18, you will have contributed about $35,000 to their account. But if the money in the meantime grows at 8% a year, they'll have $85,000 in their account when they walk across the stage to get their diploma as a senior. Now, you can't show me a lot of seniors in high school who have $85,000 in the bank. But you will be able to do that in about, 16 years with my two kids. All things considered, if nothing changes, my two grandkids, I should say, if all things stay the same, that's a decent chunk of money. And if the money grows at 10 or 12%, that's over $100,000 easily. Warren Buffett, for decades, has been able to grow his book value of his shares at about 19% a year, and that's astronomical. So anyway, get the account set up, get them invested in the right stuff, and then just let them grow, and you'll make more money. The money will make more money on its own, compounding, than you will make by making contributions over the 18 years. It's almost a 3-to-1 trade-off. So keep that in mind. Just a little tip from a young grandfather here who's starting to save some money for his kids and putting time on their side and my side to make it easier. So let me tell you, sometimes in my life, having spent about 9 years as a sales rep for the Franklin Covey Time Management Productivity Company, we used to teach people to take out your Franklin Day Planner and make a list of what you wanted to accomplish that day. I don't necessarily do that every day, A, because I don't have a Franklin Day Planner anymore. It's all electronic on my phone or iPad or whatever. But B, because typically I wake up and I have 3 or 4 jobs on the calendar already, and that dictates where I'm going and what I'm going to do. Well, today was a little different. I didn't have anything on the calendar today except for the radio show, which I was grateful for. So I got to sleep in a little bit till about 10:30, and that always feels good. That's a rarity, but it's like a mini vacation whenever I'm able to do that. And with a little bit of extra time, just lying there in bed thinking about stuff, I thought, well, let's see, maybe I should just kind of, what would I like to get done today? And I took out my phone and I went to an app, and this is my first official thing I want to talk about on the show today, is an app called Todoist, Todoist. Todoist. I think it's free. It's basically a red square box with some white check marks in the middle of it. And it's basically a task management app for your phone. And I use this because it's simple. It allows me to sort and rearrange the tasks that I want to accomplish. When I'm done with them, I just click the round button on the left and it disappears. It congratulates me if I get 5 of them done. And all I do is just clear my mind and go, let's see, it'd be nice to do this today or this today or this today. Totally unrelated things, some work, some personal, some church, some whatever. And I just get it out of my head and get it into my phone. And then I take a look at the phone. I did that this morning. I probably had about a dozen items there. And then I look at it and go, okay, which one should I do first? Which one should I do second? And then I prioritize them. And then as I go about and do them, I just check them off and they disappear. It's a simple procedure with a free app called Todoist, Todoist, all one word. And it's like to-do list, but without the L, Todoist. And it's a simple app. I've had it for years, and it's a great way to just help you get some stuff done and help you organize what you want to do without having to buy a bunch of blank pages for a year and stick them in your day planner kind of thing, right? So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take a quick break here for a minute and come back and tell you about what I've done the last 4 or 5 days, which you won't believe, but I'm going to tell you anyway because it was so much fun. And we'll go into some more issues about junk removal and how to get the junk out of your homes, and also out of your life. I'm your host, Alan Cook, coming to you from Rockville, Maryland, on the Junk Refund Show on the BBS Radio Network. We'll be back in just a minute.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. It is the world's longest-running junk removal radio show. Say that three times quick. And we're proud of that. We're in our fourth year. We did our first year on CBS, which was a blast. We've been the last 3 years on the BBS Radio Network out of Texas, and these guys are great, and we have a lot of fun with this. The shows are recorded and turned into a podcast called The Junk Refund Show. You're welcome to go pull that up wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll hear lots of interesting stories about what we do, what we run into, and how we do it. And it's just kind of a fun thing to do, and keeps me busy and keeps me off the streets. Well, it keeps me on the streets, I guess, in the truck. But it's just a fun thing to do. So let me tell you, we have a Wednesday night Bible study class, which I go to, and I kind of oversee it, I guess, in some ways. And after the Bible study class, we have these young missionaries for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you know, the clean-cut kids with the black name badges on, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, you know. So we have 10 of those that are in our church congregation, and they're constantly bringing new people in to learn about our church and to get baptized in the church and stuff like that. My job is to coordinate with them their activities each week so that we know who they're working with, and we make our resources as a congregation available so people will feel welcome and comfortable when they come to a new church and don't know much about it and want to learn more about it. We want them to feel welcome. So it's my job every week after our Bible study class. We have about a half-hour correlation meeting where we coordinate what the missionaries are doing, what our congregation is doing, and so we're all on the same page. And I run that show every week. So last night, I tend to give these folks a little bit of an upbeat spiritual message right at the end. And I told them last night something that I frequently tell people, especially in these kind of meetings. I said, there's never been a better time in the history of the world to be alive than right now. And I want to illustrate that to you by what I did in my life starting last Thursday night after the radio show. I drove up to Philadelphia, hopped on a plane. Philadelphia's about 2.5 hours north of me. Hopped on a plane, flew to Denver, got there at midnight, slept on the airport, you know, floor at one of the gates, which I'm amazingly able to do, and it actually is relaxing to me. And at 6 a.m., caught the next flight to Salt Lake City, and I was in Salt Lake City at 7:30. The reason I went to Philadelphia is that the one-way airfare was $90 for that trip. I have 3 airports in the Washington, D.C. area, but I fly on Frontier Airlines with their Go Wild Pass, which I talk about frequently on this show. And the best deal I could find, which was a savings by hundreds of dollars, was to go out of Philadelphia. So I drove my SUV up there that somebody threw away at a hauling job about 4 years ago. They actually paid me to take it, and I'm still driving it. I drove it up there, and on the back of the SUV is one of these little extended carrier type things where you could put luggage and stuff in there in the back. it's like a little shelf that's just kind of extends right out the back of the bumper of the car. That little shelf thing was also thrown away at a hauling job. And I used that, and I used the vehicle to go down into D.C. at night and pick up more scrap metal of smaller items like chairs or computers or stuff like that, file cabinets. That kind of stuff I can put either inside the SUV or I can strap it onto the carrier on the back of the SUV, and my SUV turns into a mini pickup truck. Or, as I like to refer to it, vehicle number 3 in our fleet. Vehicle number 1 is a 16-foot box truck that we rent from Enterprise that does all the big jobs. Vehicle number 2 is a Dodge Ram pickup truck, which we use to do medium and small jobs, and we can use it for bigger jobs if we need to. Vehicle number 3 is an SUV with this little extender going out the back, which almost carries the same amount as a pickup truck if you really jam it full of stuff. And vehicle number 4, which we're trying to bring online right now, is another SUV that was thrown away by a gentleman going off to serve in the military. And he asked us to just take care of it and pick it up and do whatever we need to. Well, we decided after having a mechanic check it out that the thing can still run a little bit. And last week, somebody had us haul away a 4-foot by 8-foot trailer that you pull along behind an SUV in this case. This is going to become vehicle number 4 because the trailer, we have to put some sides on it, but we've gotten a free trailer with the title. In fact, we were paid again to take it, and we can do some damage with an SUV hauling around a trailer around town, picking up stuff, and that gives us our 4th vehicle that we can use. So we're having some fun with that. But I went up to Philadelphia. I flew out to Utah. That morning, I met with my daughter and her 2 kids, and went to the Draper Aquarium, which I'd never been to before. This is a fabulous aquarium. It's got sharks and, you know, what is it, manatee rays and all kinds of fish and penguins and, you know, boa constrictor and some other stuff. And it's just kind of a cool thing. I'd never been there before, so I went out and went to that. I then took them to lunch, and that was a blast. I then dropped by my sister's home, and she's just gotten it remodeled to put it up for sale, and it looks great, and she wanted me to see it, and it's gotten an offer on it, and things are good there. Then I went to see a couple of friends of ours from Washington who went out to Utah to visit some family, and the lady had a brain aneurysm while she was out there, and it's been out there now for a month. And I took by some lunch from Subway to my good friend, her husband, and expecting to see this lady in a bed or maybe a wheelchair, she's walking around answering the door. I couldn't believe it. And her husband said, you know, your prayers have been answered, you know, the prayers of our congregation out here that these people belong to. We hope to get these folks back in the next couple of weeks. And we're grateful that she's doing so well. So I dropped some food off there. Now it's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I hit the BYU Creamery, which if you guys haven't done that, next time you're in Provo, Utah, go to the BYU Creamery. The reason for that is that if you know anything about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you'll know that we teach our members not to drink alcohol, to stay away from addictive stuff like coffee and tea, to not smoke, and don't take any harmful drugs. Now, you have, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people in that area that are members of this church. So if we want a party, we drink chocolate milk, we eat cookies and cream ice cream, or we go for donuts or sweets or something like that, right? That's our go-to stuff to feel great at night kind of stuff. Well, the BYU Creamery is really good at manufacturing that type of food, and they have these brownies that I swear are like 4 inches in, not in diameter because they're square, but 4 inches square, I guess, and they're mint chocolate brownies, and they're fabulous, and they're like a buck and a half for each one. So the bakery is well-known out there, and the ice cream is well-known out there, and at the football and basketball games for BYU sports, they create a foot-long maple bar, a rectangular maple bar called a cougar tail, and they only sell it at the athletic events. And it was ranked recently as the number one collegiate refreshment sold at a basketball or football game in the country. I don't know how many thousands of these they sell, but you can only get them at the games. So anyway, we're really good with bakery stuff, with ice cream stuff, with chocolate milk, strawberry milk, whatever. You know, we're pretty good with that, and the BYU Creamy is the place. So I stopped by there. I grabbed a brownie. I had to get a brownie because they're just so good. Then I went across the street to the Wilkinson Center, where my son-in-law is giving a presentation at 7 o'clock in a thing called Education Week, which is a week-long mini school where they have about 250 people come and speak and teach classes. And people, particularly who are members of our church from around the world, will come to this because the topics that will be discussed mean a lot to the people who are the attendees. My son-in-law is a high school teacher who has a fascination with Lord of the Rings. And he put together a class, 4 nights, talking about what you can learn spiritually from the Lord of the Rings. And that it's the first time that thing's been done at this event. 400 people packed the room each night, and I got there the final night. So I was thrilled to just sit there and watch it's the first time I've seen my son-in-law teach, and he's brilliant. He's really, really good. And he talked about Lord of the Rings and some of the spiritual things you can learn from Lord of the Rings. Now, that's a great connection to a bunch of church people who are there to learn more about, you know, all different aspects of life. And he did a fabulous job. He knows Lord of the Rings inside and out. When we go out and clean out a library for people and haul away their books, we will take it to Wonder Books here locally, which is a massive used bookstore. And they will either give us $2 a box, a banker's box of books, $2, which is not much, or about $6 to $8 per box store credit. So I get 3 or 4 times the amount of money out of this, so to speak, or trade value, as if I sold them for cash. And so I take the store credit. So I always have all these coupons good for store credit to buy stuff in their store. So I go in their store and I buy Lord of the Rings stuff, books, DVDs, whatever, and send them out to my son-in-law. And I do the same thing for my daughter, getting her Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. She has a large collection of different editions or copies of A Christmas Carol. And I love to do that. So that was part of it. And so Friday night, I'm out there watching my son-in-law blow away 400 people with his knowledge and his skill and his slides. And it was just brilliantly done. Then I go back up to the Salt Lake Airport, and I stay at a hotel there. And at 10:30 the next morning, I fly to Phoenix. Then I fly to Los Angeles. I'm going to Los Angeles because I want to go to one of our newest temples, which is in Yorba Linda, which is the Anaheim area. I'm there at 5 o'clock Saturday afternoon. I'm there for a couple of hours. That was great. One of our newest temples that we built. I then go back to LAX. I catch a $16 flight. That's not a typo. $16 flight nonstop from Los Angeles to Orlando on Frontier Airlines. I'm a member of their Go Wild Pass, and that was the rate for Go Wild Pass members. And I was trying to get myself back to Philadelphia, but the flights from LA to Philly, $500, you know, $400, whatever. But here's a flight to Orlando. It's only $16. And then all I got to figure out is how do I get from Orlando up to Philadelphia? That's a lot easier. So I took the $16 flight, and I end up in Orlando at about 8:30 in the morning. I then catch another flight up to Charlotte, North Carolina, stop off for a couple hours, then on to Philadelphia. I get into Philadelphia Sunday night about midnight. I hop in my SUV. I drive back home, and this time it's only about 2 hours because it's a midnight run down the freeway, and it's a lot less congested. And I get home at about 2 in the morning, Monday morning. at 8 o'clock Monday morning, I'm back out doing junk removal jobs, headed for my 9 o'clock job. Now, I figured out from Saturday morning until Sunday night, basically 36 hours, I was in 8 different states. Started in Utah, went to Arizona, went to California, went to Florida, went to North Carolina, went to Philadelphia, drove through Delaware, ended up in Maryland. 8 states in 36 hours at minimal cost, crisscrossed the country. That's life in today's world. I tell people, regardless of where your family lives, in my mind, you can live anywhere in the continental United States, and it's like you're next door still. I mean, you can be there. I can fly to Utah and see my son-in-law teach, right? And it was a joy. My sister was there with me. She is a professor out there, and she enjoyed it. And we gave him a standing ovation at the end. I mean, show me a better deal, Show me something to do how in the world these people that lived in the 1800s, right, when the Pony Express was there and they were riding around in stagecoaches and, we didn't have any automobiles and no cell phones and, the world was a very big place at that point. And to get from point A to point B, you did it on a stagecoach and it took days, right? And it wasn't necessarily the safest thing to do either, depending on what part of the country you're in. I can get on an airplane in Los Angeles at, I think it was like an 11:30 p.m. flight, sit in the exit row, have plenty of leg room, get a free carry-on, all of which was no extra charge, recline the seat, go to sleep, and a few hours later, that plane lands in Orlando, and I'm in Florida Sunday morning, right? $16. So as I said in a Facebook post shortly afterwards, this is why I like the Go Wild Pass so much. It's just so cheap to fly around once you have it. And if you know how to use it and you're willing to search for the right flights, it takes some effort, sometimes more effort than less, but it's worth it. If you can fly across the country for $16, I mean, show me a better deal. I don't think you can. I don't think it exists. And from Thursday night to Sunday night, which is 3 days, I was able to do all of that stuff. And it was terrific. And a shout out to Alamo Rent-A-Car, who rented me a car in Salt Lake and again in Los Angeles. And I think charged me a total of like $50 each time. I don't even think I paid a deposit for a security deposit. I may have done that for $100 in Salt Lake. I can't remember for sure. I'm not sure if I did it in Los Angeles or not, but I get that right back, right? So that's how great life is, and that's how small this country is. Now, if you can travel to 8 states in 36 hours, I'm here to tell you, this is a small world. Like they say in, Disneyland, it really is a small world. So I'm going to take a break there. That's been my last few days over the weekend, and it was very productive, and it was great, and lots of good family time, and I enjoyed every minute of it, and I even got a mint brownie from the BYU Creamery, which I highly recommend you get the next time you're in Provo, Utah. So you're listening to the Junk Refund Show. We'll come back in about a minute, do the last segment of the show. I'm your host, Alan Cook, coming to you from Rockville, Maryland on the BBS Radio Network.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show, where we teach you all things about junk removal and how to get stuff done. I'm your host, Alan Cook, coming to you from Rockville, Maryland, where we're headquartered. We are a junk removal business. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND.com is the website. We do lots of fun things. We travel around the country cleaning out homes for people, all different kinds of situations that, you know, you learn things from. And we get involved in people's lives when there's usually some kind of a significant change taking place, like maybe somebody got divorced, or maybe a college student is coming back home to live, or maybe somebody is moving across the country, or maybe they've been transferred from the government and are headed, you know, out of town or whatever. We go in and clean out the homes so the realtors can list the stuff or list the home for sale. And in the process of cleaning out the homes, we find all kinds of cool things. So one of the cool things we found recently, this was last week, was a trailer. We had a gentleman who had bought a home in Arlington, Virginia. He is an engineer, and he took a home there and basically doubled it in size by adding on a massive garage, which was his workplace, and he had all kinds of power tools in that garage, which we salivated over because we thought they were going to come with us, and we would then put them all up for sale. Instead, they conveyed on to the buyer because he wanted all the tools. So we ended up not getting all those tools. But one thing we did get was a 4-foot by 8-foot trailer that didn't have any sides on it. It was sitting outside basically as a large table on which many cases of other miscellaneous stuff was stacked. That trailer, we got the title for the trailer, and you put some sides on the trailer and you have basically a pickup truck equivalent in the junk removal business that can be pulled behind an SUV. We have a couple of SUVs and a pickup truck, and that trailer can make you money, especially when you didn't have to pay for it. So we put that trailer. It's rusty. We haven't done any work to it yet. It's rusty. It doesn't have any sides. It needs some TLC, but it was free. It's in one of our storage units right now, and I have a goal to spend about a half an hour a day whenever I'm over in that area, which is right by the scrap metal yard, to just pop in there for half an hour and basically, you know, grind or sand all the rust off of it, then repaint it, and then put some sides on it and a back on it that will fold down, and then send that sucker out to make money for us in the junk removal business, doing small jobs. I love getting free equipment. In fact, I love getting paid to take equipment that other people are throwing away that we then get to use in our business. This morning, I took apart a small air conditioning unit that I used a cordless drill and attachments that were thrown away from another hauling job to unscrew it and take it apart and take out the copper that's inside and the little radiator cooling system that's inside, and basically gutted it, threw the shell away as scrap metal, took the rest of it around the back of the scrapyard folks, and they paid us for the copper prices and made a few bucks off of that. But the tools that I use are by and large thrown away from other jobs that we do. So we're driving vehicles, we're pulling trailers, we're using add-on attachments on the back of SUVs, all of which we were paid to take, none of which we bought. In fact, we got paid to take it, right? So I just love that combination. I just love that kind of thing, and it warms my heart. So let me give you one other kind of closing story here about how to get some of the junk out of your life and how to make a difference in life. I'm a big believer that you have the right and perhaps have a little bit of a duty to stand up and say something if you see something that's going on that is not right or could be improved, could be made better, whatever. I am, as you can tell from, if you've listened to these shows before, I talk a lot about the church stuff that I do because I'm actively involved in it. And one of the responsibilities I have is for the missionary work of our congregation to let people know about what we have and how good it is. Our church buildings, I'm going to say around the world, certainly everywhere I've gone in the United States, are wonderful, awesome buildings. But one of the things we, and I don't know why this is, one of the things we have not done well, in my humble opinion, is the way we position our signs in front of these buildings. Too many times, they are static, non-electrical. I don't think we have any electrical signs, actually, in the whole world of the church. I don't think we have any, but I might be wrong. We have static signs that are placed in the front of the church buildings that face the street. They don't face the oncoming traffic. So as the traffic drives by the building, they don't see the sign unless for some reason they quickly turn their neck or turn their head to the side, can rapidly read the name of our church, which has 9 words in it, and then turn their head back to keep their vision on the road so they don't get in an accident. Well, people don't do that. You need to turn the sign so that it is perpendicular to the highway and is in the view for a number of seconds to the driver's view as he drives or she drives by the building. Well, our sign at our very expensive building that was dedicated in 2012 in Washington, D.C., on a road that has 30,000 cars a day go by this building, and 20,000 more people go by it every day on buses. That's 50,000 people a day are going by this building. And for some reason, we stuck a sign there that faces across the street so you don't see the name of the church when you're driving past the building. Does that make sense? Imagine you're on a freeway and you have to take an exit. How do you know where the exit is? You see a sign that is angled towards you, the driver, so you can read it as you're coming down the street. Suppose the sign was rotated 90 degrees and pointed directly across the highway, not at you. You would have no idea where your exit is. And unless you can read it really quickly, when you're going 60 miles an hour past it, you're going to go right past the exit, right? Imagine the billboards along freeways. Where are they? Which way do they face? They don't face across the street towards each other because nobody would see them. They face the oncoming traffic, so we all see them as we drive through Chicago or whatever. Well, the same principle applies to a church building or to a business or whatever your, you know, whatever, to a barber shop or whatever, to a restaurant. You put the sign up so the people driving down the road can read it as they approach your business. You don't put it up so that people across the street can see it because nobody is traveling towards your business from across the street. Well, this has been the case for about 4 years in this new building that we built a dozen years ago in Washington on a very busy street. And I kind of went in and went, why is the sign facing the wrong way? And why isn't it illuminated? Why is it not electrical? See, if it's electrical, we can change the messages. We can invite you to come to our Christmas program, our Easter program, our Bible study class on Wednesday night, our English as a second language class. We have a Spanish congregation that meets in this building. We could put up every other, you know, message we put up could be in Spanish and invite the Spanish community to come in and join us. You know, all kinds of things. But you can't do that with a static sign that just has the name of your church on it that nobody sees because it's facing the wrong way. So with that as a backdrop, what I did was go out and have a couple of temporary A-frame signs made. They're like, I don't know, 3 feet by 4 feet, something like that, that invited people to come into our Wednesday night Bible study class, and I just put them out in front of the church facing the oncoming traffic from both directions. That Bible study class held on Wednesday nights a few years ago, 4 years ago, had about 10 people in it, and half of them were the full-time missionaries, these young kids that are out teaching people about Jesus and et cetera. We now have 40 people a week coming to this Bible study class with a full dinner for everybody afterwards. I bring the Krispy Kreme donuts, and that's a big hit every week. And that's what we do. And it's a fabulous thing. And we have people that show up at this only because they saw it on the temporary sign that I put out in front, because the signs now face the oncoming traffic. By coincidence, this afternoon, I picked up two more replacement signs for those first signs, because the first sign, one of the signs just got worn out and I think got torn somehow. And so we just got them replaced, and I'm going to go down and replace them probably tonight and put the new signs up. And we'll have fresh new signs there that actually face the oncoming traffic. So the reason I'm telling you this story is that what we need, in my humble opinion, is an electronic sign that replaces the permanent sign that's out there. And the electronic sign is perpendicular to the street, so the oncoming traffic can read it as they come forward. And that's better, makes it better for everybody, because now tens of thousands of people can be invited to come and worship with us every day, and we can use different colors to get their attention, and we can change the messages, and we can tell you what we're going to be talking about that Sunday and the next Sunday and the Sunday after that, and we can invite you to our Bible study class and show you pictures of donuts and whatever. So I have talked to our local church leaders over the last couple of years about the need, my suggestion, to change that sign. And one of them said, hey, I have no problem if you send a letter into church headquarters and tell them, hey, we want to change this sign. That's fine. That's what our bishop said. The man who kind of oversees a larger geographical region here said, you know what, you should just, you're doing the right thing. You should just take this up the chain of command and see who can do what for you. And I did that to a gentleman who's like third up the list and has a lot of, you know, responsibility geographically in the area. And he visited our congregation. I went up to him afterwards, and I kind of told him who I was and what I was trying to do. He said, what is it you're trying to get done? And I said, I want to get an electric sign out in front of the church to replace the permanent sign we currently have. And he just started to laugh. And he just laughed, and he said, there's no way the church is going to give you an electronic sign. And as soon as I heard that, I shut up. And I just kind of nodded my head. And I said to myself, it's not for me. It's for Jesus. And he deserves better coverage than he's currently getting. I didn't say that. I just thought it. The reason I'm telling you this story is that just before I came on the air today, I dropped off at FedEx a letter to the top leader in our church globally. He is the president of the church. His name is Dallin Oaks. He's a brilliant attorney. We believe he is God's living prophet on the earth today. And I sent him about a 6-page, well-documented letter outlining the cause for changing the sign and getting a better sign. And I sent a copy of that letter to one of the 12 apostles, a guy named Quentin L. Cook, who was here in 2012 and dedicated our building. So he has a vested interest in this because he knows the building. He dedicated it a dozen years ago or so. And I just FedExed and paid $37 per letter to send those out to Salt Lake City, and they will be there before 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Now, that one letter duplicated for two people is the culmination of 4 years of thinking about this, looking at it, filming other church signs as I go around town who are doing it right, in my opinion, and comparing what I think we should have with what we currently have, and out of frustration that another local church leader just laughed at me when I said what I was trying to do, I just basically said, well, screw this, I'm going right to the top, okay? Now, I got to tell you, I'm one of these guys who has no qualms, no hesitation about sending a letter into some top leaders globally, because this is not just an issue for our church building. It's an implication for thousands of church buildings around the world. And they're all being basically constructed in the same way. For some reason, we're putting the signs facing the wrong way. And frankly, we're better than that. If you change the angle of the sign and you make it electronic, so you can use color, to attract people's attention. You can change the messages. You can change the language of the sign. You can go from Spanish to English and back to Spanish, you know. It's so much better to do that. So the only reason I comment on this, and I want to close with this, is when I stepped out of the FedEx office about 2 hours ago, having paid about $75 of my own money to FedEx overnight, a 6-page letter with photos documenting the cause of why we need to change this sign, sent to the top people in the world in our church, I'm here to tell you, I felt a burden lifted off my shoulders. Because as the local guy who deals with this and can see the benefits of making a change, I have now done everything I can do in my power to make a change. I can't just order a new sign. I don't have the authority to do that. And the people locally who could get it done laughed in my face. That's a rarity, by the way. I was kind of stunned by that, but that's what happened. That's okay. So I went to the top, and I'm basically pleading the cause at the top level to see if they could do something. It is now out of my hands. Regardless of what happens at this point, I have done my best from my position to make a change. I have not sat back and silently wished that something would happen. I have expressed my views in a very well-written, documented letter that I've mentally thought of for years and have, you know, probably done 4 or 5 rough drafts of it before I sent it off. And the reason that I sent it off today is that in a church meeting last night, one of our senior missionaries there said, oh, by the way, the leader of our church, President Oaks, is going to be in Washington in 3 weeks speaking at the National Cathedral. That's right here. He's going to be here. Well, guess what? Wouldn't it be great if he could take the motorcade and come by our church building just a few miles away and see this issue and then say, you know what? You got a good point. Let's change this sign. Because if they change it here and it works, which it will, they'll start changing them around the world. And little Alan in Washington could actually have a global impact on his own church by simply making the case for improving the signage at our building. Again, I can't tell you how great I felt once those letters were out of my hands, were in the hands of FedEx, knowing that they're going to be delivered in Salt Lake City, Utah tomorrow by 5 p.m. to the right people who can do something about this. There's nothing else I can do or should do. I've done my job times 10. I'm trying to make an improvement, not only locally, but technically globally, because the same issues apply wherever you're located. And if that's the case, if one guy can step up and say, hey, we should change this, and if our church listens to that and does it, I then legitimately have had a global impact on my organization, my church, as just a layman out here in Washington, D.C. That's a great feeling. And the great thing is, even if nothing happens, or even if they come back to me and I get a phone call or a letter that says, thanks for your input, we're going to leave it the way it is, at least I have the peace of mind that I gave it my best shot and I gave them my honest input, which I think is in the best interest of the person who owns this church, which is Jesus Christ. I think he wants more coverage, and he can get it, simply. And that's all I'm lobbying for. So again, you know, if there's something you're passionate about, if there's something going on that's your business or your school or your PTA or, I don't know, your community, something that you see that you think could be changed and for the better, I encourage you to do what you can to make that change happen. And I'm here to tell you that even if you get to the point where you have given your input to the right people, you've done your job. And regardless of what happens, you can hold your head high because you tried. And you tried in the best interest of the organization that you're dealing with, which is exactly what I'm doing. So I'll keep you posted on anything that happens here. I hope to death that since he's going to be in town in 3 weeks, that he can, you know, drive by and I can meet him over there and say, hey, here's the deal. He's already got photos of it in the letter I sent him, and he's got plenty of documentation, which a lawyer by profession is going to like. So we'll see what happens. But it is a great feeling of accomplishment when you, frankly, you have the guts and you have spent months and months thinking about this, that you did something to try to make a change and you weren't afraid to go to the top to do it. Regardless of what happens, I feel great about my efforts. And that is one of the ways to get the junk out of your life, is to do something to make it better for what could be millions of people. And that's what happened today, just before I came on the air. So with that, thanks for listening. I hope it's been an informative show. It's been a blast for me. I can't wait to see what I do this next week. But I will be back here next Thursday at 3 o'clock on the Junk Refund Show. Thanks again to the BBS Radio Network out of Texas for all the good work they do. Thanks for listening. Check out the podcast called Junk Refund Show. And contact us if you have any thoughts, questions, whatever. Or if you want to be on the show, let us know. We're pretty flexible. This is Alan Cook. Have a great week. I'll see you next Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern on the Junk Refund Show. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.